Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Each year, Liberty Magazine holds a celebration of sorts that includes good fellowship, good speakers, and good food. It's called the Liberty Dinner, and one took place not very long ago. Lincoln Steed is here to share what happened and to whom it happened. Lincoln, what made this particular dinner special to you?
Well, that's a loaded question. This particular one. Yeah. Well, this particular one is like every upcoming issue of Liberty Magazine. It's the best yet.
Yes, of course. Of course.
And I do think with the dinner, it's partially explainable for the fact that we've done it. This was the 15th time.
Wow.
We've started to learn the routine, and it's a winning package. It was held for the second time at the Museum Institute in Washington, D.C., just barely down the street on Pennsylvania Avenue from the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And the view from the balcony of this place is, I hope it's not a mixed metaphor, but it sort of reminds me of the balcony Nebuchadnezzar must have stood out and looked out. It's a view that most people don't get of Washington,
right,
D.C. It's
right.
Fantastic. Yeah. And so we held it there. There were 150 or so people that attended by invitation only, a good cross-section of the diplomatic and legislative community and the NGOs and other churches and, of course, Seventh-day Adventists. Mm-hmm. The food was the best ever. The people that make it happen here, that follow through on the details, had the foresight to go with Wolfgang Puck Caterers.
Hmm.
I wish I'd thought ahead of time. I could have got a retainer to mention that, I guess. Good advertising. But the food was wonderful, but they were not there for the food. Our keynote speaker was Dr. Ben Carson, U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, and a recent presidential candidate fame, the man that famously said being president is not brain surgery, but as a
right.
brain surgeon, he was competent. You know, as he once said on The View, I think it was, the ladies gave him a hard time. Why was he cooperating with the new administration in view of what was said about him personally? And he just shrugged it off as political talk. Well,
yeah.
It takes a strong man to shrug off some of the harsh language, but we were very impressed to hear him speak to our diverse group on religious freedom, and he gave a powerful overview and well upheld the separation of church and state and the unique role of the U.S. with its own emphasis on religious freedom and its role in projecting that to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an inspiring presentation. He's a very laid-back man, but he spoke not forcefully, but authoritatively. The program went about an hour and a half, but, you know, with all the little connecting bits and pieces, it's not many elements other than that. So there was the meal, his address, and then we presented three plaques. We honored Kimberly Colby, director of the Christian Legal Society Center for Law and Religious Freedom, for her work over 35 years on domestic religious liberty cases. And then another familiar face in the Washington Religious Liberty Circle, Thomas Farr, president of the Religious Freedom Institute, gave him the international award for his 20 years of work with religious liberty. And then I had the privilege at the end of the program of giving a commendation plaque to Dr. Bert Beach, who is there. He's pushing 90,
yes, yes.
Only a few months, a week shy of 90. When I was growing up, from my teen years on, Bert Beach was the forefront of Seventh-day Adventist religious liberty work.
Absolutely, absolutely.
He was sort of the father of the modern religious liberty work, certainly as it applied to interchurch relations and government contacts. So none of us know how long we're here, but at 90, you know, you need to honor someone while they're still around.
Sure, sure.
And I took full advantage, and I think he was well worth recognizing. To me, that put a great cap on the evening, where we'd heard a top government official who happens to be a Seventh-day Adventist, but he wasn't there because of his Adventist roots. And like all of us, he sometimes says his own thing. He's not speaking for the church, per se, but I would hope that his Adventist faith gives him a particular moral clarity on his public responsibilities. And so it was great to hear him speak. It was a wonderful time to honor these others. And, of course, the meal and the fellowship that we had at the same time underscored, as it was intended, that Liberty Magazine, NALA, our North American Religious Liberty Association, and the Adventist Church as a whole is a player in the best sense in the religious liberty scene, that we're taking a lead, modeling religious liberty, and advancing it by advocacy. So overall, whatever money is spent, well spent, and the time and effort, of course, we gladly do it because we want to interact with our neighbors here in the capital and through the diplomatic corps through other countries.
Now, Lincoln, let me ask you a question here. If you could go back to, 2002, the first time you did one, 15 years ago, if you could go back and talk to the room full of people there, knowing what you know now, would you have any words of advice for the religious liberty community in what was to come? I mean, 9/11 had just happened, and we were facing this tremendous influx of patriotism, and it ended up dividing this country like nothing ever has before. What advice would you give to the first meeting that you have learned after going to 15 of them?
Well, you hinted at it, even if you didn't answer your question. The advice is that we should set our own house in order. As we reach out internationally, we need to make sure our own house is in order. And things, I don't think, have generally improved within the United States. I mean, it's hardly to be equated with a repressive place like North Korea, but the panic of 9/11 has brought in some negative legal models that have impacted the practice of religious liberty and have also created a climate of prejudice in certain regards of religion that is not good. And I think the incipient over-nationalism is not really healthy for true religious liberty.
Talk often here about learning from the past, and in these 15 years that have gone by and you've had these 15 dinners, what are we learning?
Well, it's just one dinner among many, many other events and in a greater context.
Yes,
so
while
it's effective as a single event, I think the larger stream of things has flowed on regardless, and it's flowing in a rather sobering direction.
The people that come to these things, what do you want them to leave with? What I mean, you're preaching to the choir when you have these things. You've invited the choir over for supper. So what are you telling the choir that they need to know that will motivate them to continue on doing and singing as they are, if they're going to be a choir metaphor?
On the same day before this event, the General Conference Religious Liberty Department of our church, operating under its International Religious Liberty Association organizational model, ran a Reformation seminar, and they had about six major lecturers to discuss the Reformation. Well, clearly the design there was to stimulate discussion and to make presentations that generally support our viewpoint.
Yes.
So that's educative. I don't think the Liberty Dinner ever could be a moment to greatly inform people. In the past, we've had some very major political figures,
yes,
and the best we can do is to make sure that when they speak, they don't counter our message.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, someone like John McCain or Hillary Clinton, both of whom have spoken, you can't directly tell them what to say. So, you know, they're the draw card. The message we want is that Seventh-day Adventists are front and center in this religious liberty effort. If we get that across, that's almost the beginning and the end of the reason for that particular event. But what we're communicating in the long haul and through other avenues and other contacts should be more detailed. And, yes, a huge prescription how to stand for religious liberty and speak out and influence other countries, influence the Congress and so on. And, of course, ultimately influence the individuals that live in an area.
As you mentioned, there were several members of NARLA there, Kevin James and Greg Hamilton, et cetera, et cetera. We've had them on the program before. What did they leave with? What did they, in your mind, what was different about this that they left with and went home thinking, well, I wasn't quite sure about it, now I am? What do you think that would be?
All the feedback I got from our, quote, insiders was this was wonderful. They left with warm fuzzies.
Warm fuzzies. Okay, that's good.
And, you know, I had certain cautions, as always, about elements of it, but it was almost perfect. The only imperfect element was we didn't have great control over the date, and at that particular day, Congress was not in session. Now, that always makes it harder to pull them in because many congressmen and senators, the minute their legislative work's over, they're gone.
They're gone, yes, yes.
But we always have more than a sprinkling of staffers and hangers-on in the best sense.
That's good.
From the whole legislative edifice. Mm-hmm. So, and the word gets out. In fact, many of those that don't attend, just the mere fact that we hold it and we send them a notice,
yes,
that will register on their radar that we're alive and well and pushing the cause of religious freedom.
That's an important point because a lot of us as citizens of this country say, well, you know, nobody cares. I don't have a chance to talk. Yes, we do. We have a chance to let our voice be heard. It might be an email. It might be a comment on Facebook. It might be a little tweet on Twitter. If we comment, people are going, oh, wait a minute, these people exist. These thoughts exist. These ideas exist. I need to pay attention to them. Am I on the right track here?
We've got to all move toward critical mass.
Yes.
And none
yes.
of us know when that moment might be, but
yes.
we know we can see it in political movements. And I think in the last political competition, that largely led to the present outcome.
Yes.
And no one could have anticipated it early on. We know from a biblical basis, pushing for religious liberty, as D. James Kennedy told me once, he says, you know, God wins at the end.
Yes.
and we know that. But along the line, it needs to be seen that the liberty principle is alive and well and that it has proponents.
Mm.
And the more that it's seen, the more it will have a feedback effect.
Right, very good. There you are, listener. We cannot keep still. We need to kindly and lovingly let our voices be heard. And that's the message from Liberty Magazine, also from the Liberty Dinner that was recently held in Washington, D.C. Lincoln Steed, editor, was overseeing all of that. Lincoln, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate your words of wisdom. www.libertymagazine.org is the website. Check it out, listener. Lots of good stuff there. Subscribe to the magazine. Listen to these radio programs. Read the blogs. Read the articles. All right there at libertymagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.